Welcome to Savage Starlight, the officially unofficial podcast for The Last of Us on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking Season 1, Episode 9, Look for the Light. Aaron, it's the full recap podcast. You've seen it a few more times, at least once. I don't want to put too much pressure on you. How do you feel about it coming out of the second?
I've done nothing but watch this episode since we stopped talking about
46
it. 46
times.
I subscribed to experimental Google contact lenses, so they played behind my eyelids as I slept.
Nice.
I am the world's foremost expert on this episode, and I say it's good. There's a lot of people I see in the feedback already saying, am I supposed to feel this kind of empty and hollowed out and... like, you know, there's like, I feel like I got sucker punched, but also I got what I wanted, you know, and I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how I remember feeling after playing this video game. Like, Ellie says, okay, you smash cut to black, the credits roll, and I just sat there on my couch like, fuck, I don't like how this feels. It's like seeing Braveheart when I remember that's the first movie I ever saw where the good guy doesn't necessarily win in the end.
Sure.
And like when it's happening, it's like, oh, surely his men are going to, oh, they're out the crowd there. I've seen Robin Hood. This is going to, and then, oh my God, they're going to be, you can't like stuff your guts back into a body back in the Middle Ages and live, right? Like he's, oh, they're chopping, oh, there goes his head. Well, he's definitely going to die now. Yeah, sometimes it's a bummer, and that's what this. I think that the cap of this episode or the cap of this season is bittersweet, if it's sweet at all. And that makes it great. Like, it's funny that I don't know. I'm glad that people are having the debate over the morality and everything, the big issue. But like to me, it's not nearly as interesting as like what does Ellie mean when she says okay. And I like that all those conversations are happening all across America right now. What about you? Have you been watching it constantly? Have you been monitoring the episode?
No, I have not been. I have to confess, I did not get the Google implants, the contact lenses. I couldn't afford them. You know, I'm working with a budget over here, Aaron. I know you're not, but I am. I couldn't do it, but I have seen it twice now, and the second time I enjoyed it even more than the first time, and the first time I was blown away. So I'm a big fan of this episode. I really love some of the smaller moments. You know, it's to me, like, the thing that hits the hardest isn't the okay, it isn't the lie, I swear, it's the scene where Joel sits down and tells Ellie about the time he tried to kill himself because he lost Sarah and how she has changed that for him. And he doesn't come out and say it, right? Because he's not gonna. He's Joel. But that moment is super powerful to me. And, you know, little moments like just Ellie kind of walking around traumatized to see all that life sucked out of this once life-filled kid is rough. You get the looks at the end of last episode, but this is when it really sinks in what the damage is, you know? That stuff just kind of crushes me in this episode. And then you get to the end and I'm like kind of half pissed at Joel. I'm half pissed at Marlene for being so dumb. I'm like, it's more complex in those final moments. And so it doesn't quite hit as effectively for me, but...
I think the other thing that underlines all the action is our realization that like Joel and Ellie are as close that they've ever been. You know, clearly she's hurt and she's healing. Joel doesn't know if she's like beyond repair, but like the giraffe scene suggests that no, she can recover. You know, there is, it's like,
sure,
there is a spark inside that, you know, she can find the next thing that's like Joel talks about, that's worth living for. Right. She found it like within moments of the speech. But then at the end of the episode, there is this, that like, just as they got as close as they ever got. And then the hospital situation is, it's such an artificially constructed circumstance but it makes everything work so well. The fact that, like, you know, Joel's not going to be able to get a chance to say goodbye. Mm-hmm. Joel's not going to. And why would they, and Marlene knowing Joel, why would she think that he would want that, something like that? She's wildly misjudged the situation.
The situation has changed on her, right? Like, the ground has shifted underneath her feet. Yeah.
Right. And she's got this other thing she's got to worry about. And then Ellie's going to wake up right again, right as they were the closest they've ever been. And now immediately there's going to be this gulf that yawns between them again. This thing that's been done, this lie. Mm-hmm. And it's so ironic because, like, if he had done anything else, there wouldn't be the gulf, but there wouldn't be any Ellie, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like one, it's like this kind of like really peculiar hell that he's put himself into, or threatened to put himself into, where he saved the thing that he couldn't bear to lose. But like, what going forward now, what's that going to look like? You know? Mm-hmm. And then again, there's the whole, like, it's also been entertaining to look at everybody's, you know, temperature on the fuck them Fireflies question. I've often wondered if I was a weirdo to have that reaction because, you know, I don't really go on the forums to talk about, like, people's reaction to video games. And when I do, I'm almost always disappointed because it's oftentimes like, you know, what is this? I don't give a shit about what a 17-year-old thinks about the end of this video game. No offense. I'm sure you're on the way to being a fascinating person, 17-year-old. But yeah,
sarcasm.
Yeah, to see. No, I'm seriously. You probably are. Okay. Like I thought I was a worldly 17-year-old at the time too. And I'm telling you now, I had some seasoning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that just seeing everybody kind of like it's universal. Like I thought there'd be this like big kind of moment, but it seems universal. Everyone kind of came to the conclusion that like, yes, if all things being equal, you should sacrifice a girl to save all of humanity. But my God, look at the circumstantial things here. Look at like, do we believe? I feel like 99% of the viewing audience is roughly how I felt, where it's like, yeah, maybe Joel did this tragedy, but like, how could he ever have done anything else in this circumstance? And kind of fuck the Fireflies for putting him in that position.
It's the most successful thing they do with the ending of this is they come to the only logical conclusion for Joel. I mean, Joel, you know, can't give up Ellie in this moment. And so much that he's willing to lie to her face in order to not have to give her up. Yeah. And it's obviously selfish in some ways, and it's obviously to protect her.
Yeah.
But it's at such a great cost to everyone else. It doesn't feel wrong is the thing, right? It feels like the decision I would not want him to make because I care about the human existence. But at the same time, you don't fault him for making it.
It's something I didn't think about, like, you know, 12 years ago when I played the game for the first time. But I definitely think about it now. It's also a kind of a lesson in, like, you got to consider the human factor. Like, if you're an expert that's going to have the arcane knowledge that will save people or whatever, like, you've got to be careful about how you go about on those moves. Because if you go about the whole, like, hey, we've taken care of everything, there's not going to be any pain. There's not going to be any fear. You just have to trust us. And the process is going to, you're going to get people like Joel that are not going to fucking take that. You have to consider the human aspect and the fact that, like, I think half, you know, a large part of my Firefly problem is that they just didn't. They didn't. They thought that, and they half-assed it. They had this heavy hand, but they'd only use it halfway. And in this very kind of, like, passive-aggressive, convince themselves they're correct in an ivory tower kind of way. And I think that comes across as gross, and it's lessons we can learn about ourselves and how, you know, how we deal with our fellow man. Like, you have to plan for the human component of any kind of tragedy or disaster or something. And if you don't, you're planning to fail because you are dealing with humans.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. We ready to get into the recap? Talk about this.
Yes.
More?
But I also want to make one final impassioned plea to if you like Bald Move, you like us talking about television and movies, we have tons of stuff for the rest of the year going on. We're about to start our coverage of Yellow Jackets. In fact, if you're just following us on the Last of Us feed on the Savage Fartlight man, I made it almost a whole season without that hilarious mispronunciation. But if you're following just on a Savage Fartlight, you might want to check out the Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige. Bald Move Pulp is where we have all our fantasy and sci-fi stuff. Prestige is where we host, you know, a little bit more serious-minded. Funny enough, I'm not going to get into it. Yeah. On Prestige, we're going to be doing Yellowjacket Season 2. That's on Showtime. It was a great thriller, kind of mystery box with a lot of great, fantastic performances. If you want to get a different side to who was the leader of the...
Jackie?
Of the Kansas City.
Oh, militia. Melanie Lynskey.
Melanie Lynskey is amazing. Christina Ricci is in that season. She's great. Juliette Lewis. There's a ton of excellent female leads in that. It's about a cheerleading squad that goes down in the Yukon in a plane crash, and they have a bunch of mysterious experiences in the woods. And then now it's 30 years later, I think. And the women are dealing with some kind of, you know, lingering trauma and things from the experience. We're really looking forward to that. And then Severance, the breakout hit from Apple TV, is coming out later this year. We're going to be all over that. And then over on Bald Move Pulp, we already got Star Trek Picard and The Mandalorian. And if you have listened to us all season long and you've gotten a few laughs and you like even more Jim and Aaron type stuff, go to support.baldmove.com. Get rid of all the ads. That's a nice bonus. But we also do probably average two and a half shows a week, at least, just for our club members. So check that out, support.baldmove.com. Okay, now that I've harangued you, let's get into the recap. Now's the time to endure and survive. We'll be back with more Savage Starlight.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
We've got lots of ongoing coverage this week, from book versus show comparisons for Hot D to the latest very special episode of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? But there are a couple of main events this week you need to know about.
Firstly, we've got a brand new commission podcast out this Tuesday covering the Raid 2, sometimes subtitled Retaliation. If you're a fan of martial arts films, this is one you don't want to miss. Iko Uwe is a rising star in the action movie world, and it's easy to see why. Join us on Tuesday as we dive into the bigger, badder sequel to The Raid, try and figure out which is better.
Then on Thursday, we're covering the season finale of Hulu's excellent period drama, Shogun. We've been waiting all season to see what Toranaga Sama's plan is, or if he even has one. It all comes down to this, and we couldn't be more excited. Join us on Thursday for what's sure to be an epic Shogun season finale podcast, and to find out if we plan to cover any related materials.
You find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app. We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. the thrills of King's Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Just so we're clear about back there, it was either us or the ad. Welcome back to more Savage Starlight. All right, we start off with Ellie's mother, Anna, giving birth to Ellie while actively being bit by the infected. I don't know where you want to stop with this, because that's the cold open, and then we get the theme, and then we come back to this scene. Maybe we could talk about the whole thing. Marlene arrives with a couple of other fireflies. Ellie's mother begs her to kill her and keep the baby safe. And that's kind of the whole... She does. She does kill her. Man, this is a rough scene. Ellie's mother. I want to know so much more, right? Like, every time they show me more information about Ellie's backstory or anybody's doing anything, I want to know, oh, how did they get into this situation?
Right.
Like, how did she end up running through the woods, apparently 8.9999 repeating months pregnant, and being chased by infected into this house where she's supposed to meet with fireflies who didn't show up?
How did she get separated from that group? How did a single...
Why is she by herself doing this? Yeah, I have so many questions about what went wrong to put her in this situation.
Yeah. Which is funny, because this is something that we didn't see in the game. So, like, a new piece of information to just ask, you know, a whole bunch of new questions, or raises a bunch of new questions. And the way that they filmed this, like, you know, she gave birth literally as she was being bought. Infected lady grabbed, and they wrestled and they fought for about 10-15 seconds. As soon as the lady gets stabbed, she looks down, boom, the baby came out, and all the excitement. I wonder if that's going to be a breakthrough in maternity ward care. It's going to be called the Z birth, where right in the middle, like, C-section, as the contractions hits, a paid actor without just comes in, busts in, and starts menacing the pregnant woman. Before she knows it, the combination of endorphins and adrenaline just shoots the baby out of her system. You know, you can take a picture with the zombie actor afterwards. It's heartwarming. Goes great for the Christmas card that year.
I was telling you, read the fine print on the waivers you're signing. Read the fine print.
You got to. But yeah, like there's a lot of that. Like, when did she get bit? And then she realizes, oh God, I'm still connected. I got to cut this. But they're suggesting this weird kind of blended origin. I don't know what they're... Do you have a feeling of what they're trying to do in terms of, like, the biology here? Or...
I guess... No, because it's all made up and it's all kind of dumb, but
that's kind of where I came at, yeah.
But what I think they're going with is that because Ellie was born with the cordyceps in her system, she's registering as cordyceps to cordyceps. So I'm not sure why this would work any more than injecting a human with cordyceps. It's not like this baby is not a human being until the very moment it comes out of its mother. It's like, right, if she was conceived by someone who had cordyceps, and then she was, like, somehow it was a delayed cordyceps reaction for 9 months and she was born, and, like, that I might believe.
The thing is like, isn't... I've forgotten a lot about biology, but I thought there was something special about the blood barrier in the placenta, that, like, you know, there's some things that go across, but there's also, like, immunities and whatnot, but there's also, you know, it's a separate circulatory system. It's not like literally the blood of the mother flows into the infant, you know. They don't share a circulatory system. So, like, it wasn't clear to me that, like, just hooked up 15 seconds would even, 10 or 15 seconds would even transmit anything. So I don't know. Again, it's like one of those things where I'm not sure of the science of this. And because I'm not sure of the science, I definitely take that into the Firefly scene. Because if they're saying like, oh, there's some kind of complex chemical masking that's happening here, and it makes Ellie appear as not or as mushroom to the mushroom when she's not mushroom, that does not play out in any of the interactions we've seen her have with infected. Like, the infected do not treat her. We've seen what infected do to things that it recognizes as itself. Like, if a bunch of them were, like, getting, trying to make sloppy kisses at her, or were just kind of being around her peacefully. But, like, no, she sends them into a rage just like anything else does. So, I'm left even more confused about what the fuck is going on here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Like I said in the instant take, I'm just taking at face value everything that they say about the science of this, because it's all made up bullshit anyway, right? Like, none of it is real.
Well, so that's there's the no thing. Way to it disprove is. That's what the thing. It is. It's like they are naming a species. Yeah, like it is. They are real, but then there's points where we. Get off the highway of reality and we get off into the dirt tracks, and I feel like we're pretty far into the dirt tracks now.
Yeah, I mean, the whole scenario, none of anything in The Last of Us could actually happen because the cordyceps can't survive in the human brain. So.
Right. But they're trying to do end runs around, like, we can't do a vaccine for fungus. They're like, well, we're not doing a vaccine. We're doing a chemical signaling masking thing. And you don't even know what the fuck that is. Yeah. So how can you say it's impossible? It feels like they're trying to even more science proof it, but...
Yeah, Marlene calls it a cure at the end. I think that's also wrong. I don't think you can take a syringe full of cordyceps or whatever messenger shit is going on in Ellie's brain, inject it into a clicker, and suddenly they'll just like put on a suit and go to work.
You just start shaving the mushroom off. Oh, it's a person under here. Yeah.
No, yeah, it does. When your head splits open, I think you're beyond a cure at that point.
Yeah, when you have a cleft all the way through your skull down to like your nasal cavity, I think there's no coming back from that. It would have been interesting if they'd said like, this is like a dual, like it's not a vaccine, but it will keep you from being attacked, and it also attacks the pathways that communicate with the human host. So essentially, like if we spray this in a crop dusting scenario over a city, it will both keep people from being attacked, and the fungus people who are existing will die, you know, like within days or weeks. Mm-hmm. That would be cool. That would be like, I would say, okay, that's a cure, but I don't know. And again, they didn't even get there because Joel did the thing he did. So
yeah.
Yeah. Bit of a moot point.
I thought it was a little ballsy to try and tell a backstory and the final sequence of this story in the same short episode.
Yes.
It being only like 40-50 minutes somewhere in there. When they started with this Ellie's mother stuff, I was like, wow, okay, they're gonna be pretty ambitious here. Ultimately, I thought they had the time to spare. It didn't feel like this cut anything out of the mainline story that we were already in. It only added to it, so I think it was the right call.
And we talked about that in the Super Spore Lore, I think, last week, that, like, if you really thought about it, there was not a lot of ground that they have to cover.
Yeah.
You know, the hospital sequence, if you take out all the boom boom, is pretty quick. And then you've got the, you know, the epilogue. But all that, those beats, like, especially if you're not going to take time to, like, go through a flooded tunnel and kill a bunch of random infected, like, it moves along pretty quick. But I felt the same way when they... when I saw Ashley Johnson, or I actually heard her, and I'm like, well, that's fucking Ellie, because she sounds just like Ellie. I kind of thought like, well, because I'd seen like there's rumors that Ashley Johnson will later appear, and like, is that stuff that was, did I ever see that sourced? Or I started thinking, like, you know, as we got later in the season, well, maybe that was just wrong. Maybe that's going to be cut content, or that'll be on the Blu-rays when they come out. But when they started it up, I'm like, well, this is a really interesting way to bookend it. But I think they made a point in the official podcast to remind us that, like, this all like Ellie's real mother and surrogate father save her, and they use a pretext of a lie. You know, like Sarah here does. Is it Sarah? No, it's not Sarah. It's Anna. Mm-hmm. Anna here says she wasn't bit, or she was bit after that she cut the cord. Well, we know that's not true. Joel swears to Ellie that everything happened is exactly how I said. We know that's not true. I thought that was kind of interesting that it's yet another similarity, another juxtaposition they're making between her parents and what a parent's willing to do. Like, obviously, these are her best friends. She's known Marlene in particular. She's putting them at risk because the imperative to save her child is overriding all that. I thought that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, they make the point that, like, she's putting Marlene at risk. I don't think that's true in any way. Like, there is nothing about, I mean, it doesn't even have teeth. They say, like, oh, maybe it's gonna bite you. With what teeth?
You. It's the fungal teeth. The fungal teeth, as it reprograms the infant, it just makes sharp, chitinous razor blades. This baby's gonna come at the crazy.
I didn't feel like she was putting Marlene in any danger. It was more the ask, the responsibility of it, not the danger of it. To take my child in this world where everything is already so fucked up and you have so much responsibility to begin with, right, and do something with it. A child is not something you can discard lightly. It's not something that's easy to take care of. It requires a lot of responsibility and attention. And that's a huge ask. That to me was more where the problem was.
Let me ask you this. Why did they show Marlene hesitating to fulfill her duty? Like, I wondered on the instant
kill
take if
Anna
are they trying to set up some kind of, like, I thought they're trying to make a point about Marlene and about how she tries to take the easy way out. Like, there's like some kind of like opposition to Joe, where Marlene is pragmatic and practical and, you know, not sentimental. When she finally does kill Anna, she does. There's no long, like, tearful goodbye. It's just matter of fact, walk in there, bang, you're done.
I guess she's willing to. It shows she's willing to put aside her emotion and do the thing that needs to be done. And it stands in juxtaposition to Joel as a counterexample. She's the opposite of Joel in that regard, right? She feels deeply, but she does it anyway. And Joel is the exact opposite. He feels it, and he has to follow those feelings. But yeah, other than that, I don't know what it's trying to say about Marlene.
Yeah, yeah. Also, why didn't the Fedra, or why didn't the Firefly cover that baby's ears? His commanding officer said, cover the ears. He's standing there. He has a capability of, like, cupping the baby's ears and pushing the other ear against his chest, and he just fucking doesn't.
He's afraid. If you handed me a baby and you said cover this baby's ears, I would be extremely worried that I would just cave in its skull. I don't know how hard to press on a newborn infant's ears in a safe way. So maybe he just assumed it's
pressure.
Better for the gunshot than me to clap this baby's head into a pile of goo accidentally.
I have an alternate theory.
Okay, please.
It's Fireflies are bad people. Fireflies are bad people.
This again, huh?
That hurt people, and they're the type that would run an experimental Nazi-type program on pregnant women and little girls, and they should have been stopped. They should have been stopped a long time ago, you know? The apocalypse is bad enough with this false hope that they're offering, and this bullshit child butchering program they got, and this, you can see the psychopathy exposed right here. We got a newborn infant, and he's gleefully shredding its eardrums for no good reason.
Sure, I got an alternative explanation as well. Marlene gave him exactly 0.46 seconds to cover the baby's ears, and he had guns in his hand, and he had a backpack, and he had a baby, and she just fucking walks in there and blows him away.
Do you have a little high pressure situation with the baby there, the big bad firefly? Firefly man gonna kill little kids later on. Oh, he can't juggle a baby and cover its ears. Oh, he's under so much stress.
When do you think the last time this guy held a baby was, huh? Huh? This guy's never held a baby. He's worried about crushing it.
They're
he's worried
precious
about dropping
in this
it.
World more than anything.
Yeah, so he doesn't want to drop it. He doesn't want to smash its head into goo. I agree with him. And she doesn't give thought, him any time. No, she gives no, him no, half no. a
if
second.
If he thought he could
boom.
Smash that baby's head to goo and get away with it, he fucking would. But he doesn't have the moral mandate. All he can do is expose its ears to gunfire, and that's enough for that sadistic son of a bitch in this moment.
Apparently it did zero damage. Ellie's hearing is fine. So no worse for wear.
We don't know that. She could have been fucking post-apocalyptic Daredevil, and now she's just normal.
Oh, that's okay? true. She could have had that cordyceps hearing.
We don't know
she
what
could have
her,
been a clicker.
That's
a human
right.
clicker hybrid.
That's right. And this guy fucked it up because he's a sadist.
All right, let's get back to 2023, where Joel is trying to cheer up a despondent Ellie with Chef Boyardee, Boggle, and guitar lessons. As you, might imagine, not having much luck there. Although she does love Chef Boyardee. And what kid wouldn't want to learn how to play guitar? It's kind of cool.
Yeah, especially from Pedro Pascal. He's your cool uncle. This is just like the video game, right? You know, like... when you're playing and like Ellie, because I recall correctly, Joel, you're kind of like this in the game too. Like you know, you find issue of Savage Starlight. And you say, hey, look, Ellie, I found you a Savage Starlight. She's like, oh, that's cool. And it's just like, it's just not the same. Like you are now trying to be the clown. And 17 hours ago, you wanted to strangle this fucking girl because she's always doing stupid shit trying to get you killed. And now you just want to try to get a smile out of her, right?
Yeah. And the way those roles are reversed, it used to be Ellie whipping open the pun book and trying to get Joel to crack a smile. Now she's
with no
the one
response.
On the other.
And yeah. And he's like, he keeps on, you know, he's constantly looking back at her, trying to steal glances, trying to check up on her, make sure she's okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with good reason. She feels very different in these scenes. And Bella
detached.
Does a great job.
Distracted. They do great with the sound design where she's just literally in her own world and you know, Joel has to like shout to get her attention.
Yep. And then they walk through the city for a bit. They run across an obstacle, so they decide to get through a building, climb a skyscraper, and feed a giraffe, which cheers Ellie up pretty good. Joel sees her happy and gives her one last chance to back out before he takes her to the Fireflies, but she says, we've come too far. It has to be for something. It can't be for nothing.
There's an open question from our instant talk about what Joel says here about the luck of these people, that the military dropped bombs all around, not one demolishing the building they're supposed to hit. I think I got a good answer for that. Did you come up with one?
Best I could come up with is that this cheating is supposed to indicate some kind of quarantine that they were trying to bomb. Because there were a lot of infected in this building and they just fucking missed. I don't know.
I thought they're talking about the hospital would be the epicenter that they're trying to bomb, because that would be a collection of like sick people and there's all this rubble surround the one thing they're trying to get to. And he's like making an ironic thing. It's like they're trying, you know, they
this
ripped
this
giant moat.
Out.
Yeah, and then they hit everything except for the one thing they were probably trying to destroy. And I feel like that probably makes sense, but...
Boy, really have to stop and think about that one.
You do. I like the... Like, I think they played this like the video game, too, where, you know, she does the ladder boost and she drops the ladder. I think it's like it's exactly like this, where she drops the ladder and it triggers you of like, you know, she's yelling and she's, you know, like, oh my God, what is she going to get into? She's out of my sight. She's running ahead. And you are so worried about her. And then you get to this, you know, because this happens almost immediately after the David sequence in the game time. Like it flashes the back and then you go to here and you run up and there's the fucking giraffes. I'm glad to see that most people that this worked in the context of the series as well as it did in the game. Like it was just this kind of like brief moment of maybe things are going to be okay.
Yeah, you get to see
the world's still worth living.
There's still some light in Ellie. You know, it's not hopeless for her. She is not completely broken.
Yeah.
And you know, Joel follows this up with the 1-2 punch of, hey, here's a beautiful just a beautiful moment with giraffes and an innocent moment like things used to be before last episode. And then he follows that up with, and also here's the story of the time when I experienced this and how I reacted and what changed for me, which is you. This scene we're about to get to with the medical camp is one of my favorites in the episode.
I like the reprise of episode two, where, you know, from on top of the state building where it's like, you know, you can't deny the view. I thought that was really nice. A nice bookend for the adventure, the journey.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of the CG on the giraffe?
I thought it was really good. I didn't have any problems with it.
That's a real giraffe.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, I saw
that might explain why I thought it was so good.
I saw some people talking shit about the, like, it didn't look real or it looked artificial or something like this. And I thought so too. I thought it was a CG giraffe and it did look a little weird to me. But there's tons of pictures like on Instagram of the, you know, apparently the giraffe, Bella and Pedro are the only real things on that entire thing. They are standing in front of a green railing. The giraffe is in a green box. And I think that's when I kept on watching, like, why does this giraffe not passing the sniff test? And I think it's because it's got green tint. Like, you can actually see the green tint that you get, you know, sometimes when we're doing green screen work and you sit too close to the green screen, you start
the splash, it changes color.
I think there is the whiff of green screen compositing to this giraffe.
You need a pretty big sound stage to shoot a giraffe without any splash of your green screen.
And I think that because of the aperture that it had to, like, lean in here, like, I just think it's, like, because of the way they needed to do this artificial set, it just, is casting the wrong, a little bit of the wrong kind of light.
I didn't have any problems with it. I didn't see, both times that I was watching this, I was looking down, taking notes as this giraffe kind of walks away. Do they show it with other giraffes, or is it just a single giraffe?
Like a herd of like four giraffes.
Because I remembered in the game they did, and I didn't see that in the show. I was like, why wouldn't they do that? But it sounds like they did.
Yeah, and I love how, even though it's not literally from Joel's POV, that it is from Joel's POV. Like, we're watching Joel watch Ellie. We don't watch the giraffe. Yes. We're watching, and that's like the quintessential parent experience, is when you're doing stuff with your kid. You're not soaking in the thing that you're soaking into. Like, if you take them to the Grand Canyon, you're only partially experiencing the Grand Canyon. You're experiencing your child experiencing the Grand Canyon. That's the overwhelming input. And I liked how they captured that. Like, it's true to the video game that, like, everything is processed through Joel's reaction to Ellie. And he's smiling and kind of tearing up because she's smiling. And I love that.
And on the giraffe thing, I like that it joins back up with what you assume is its family, right? You've got a big one, you got a smaller one, at least in the game. Like I said, I didn't see in the show, but I like that, because we're talking about what is now a family. Joel and Ellie are a family.
And these dialogues are all crucial to, like, your moral calculus for the end, because, like, Ellie, I thought it was so interesting on the subsequent watchings that Ellie's formulating. It's like, hey, after all we've been through, and all the people that we've lost, this can't be for nothing. We've got to see this through to the end. We've got to finish this. And you're thinking, well, Marlene's right. Like, if they had asked Ellie, she would have been gung-ho about it.
And they hit that again at the very end. You know, she mentions Tess. She mentions,
But then she also, after that, says, and then when we're done, we'll go wherever you want, and I'll follow you wherever you go. Implying that, like, Ellie is not even considering that this is a terminal ending. Now, I'm probably like 97% sure she's still, like, if you explained her the option, that she would still go for it. But like that, I felt like this dialogue gives a little bit of wiggle room in that moral. It's like, well, yeah, she's all for seeing this to the end, but she also sees a future for herself. You can't necessarily just say that she's going to be fine with this.
Yeah, and I think that's why we talked about the choice there being taken from her, not just by Joel when he lies to her, but by Marlene also when she does not. She leaves out important information, right?
Yeah, and I'll have more to say when we get to that point. But I'm just like, this dialogue is really setting up the ammunition for and against this decision.
Yeah, and it does it on both sides, and I love that. I love that it's not going to give you an easy out to say this is what I think Ellie would have wanted, for sure. Yeah. All right, let's go down to the medical camp, because that's where Joel and Ellie go. Joel tells her the story of how he lost his hearing in one ear, which is the story of how he tried to kill himself the day after he lost Sarah, but he couldn't go through with it, and how Ellie has helped him heal. As they walk on, some people sneak up and knock them out.
Yeah, that's the scene. I don't know if there's any more to add. You know,
I mean, it's an amazing scene. I just love this line so much, where Joel is saying in his very Joel way, "You're the thing that has made life worth living again."
Yeah,
and it took me 20 years of living in that state of like that state of loss, that state of damage.
Yeah.
And here you are bringing me back out of it finally.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to say any of that. He can just say it's not time that did it. And I love that. I love it. And is Joel thinking or maybe hoping that he can be that for Ellie in these scenes as well?
I didn't take it for that. If so, that's an awful lot of pressure to put on a child as a parent. But I think it's more of like, you never know.
Mm-hmm.
You keep living and put one foot in front of the other because you never know when you are going to find that spark. Like, you know, Bill never knew that he was going to find Frank. Joel never knew he's going to find Ellie. Ellie has no idea who and what lies in her future that is going to, you know, will she have to wait 20 years to find something that makes it all worthwhile? But like Joel is trying to, I think at the other end, that, you know, at the experience of wisdom and of a life lived, that like, I went through 20 years of shit, and I'm telling you right now that I'm glad I did. I'm glad that I didn't skip all of the pain, all of the loss, all of the stuff, you know, because the way I feel now right here makes it worth it. And I think that's a great lesson to try to teach your child, that like, you know, don't make rash decisions when things are bad, because you never know when things are good again, and you'll never know what you miss if you don't stick around.
Yeah. And I love, you know, an especially perceptive teenager, Ellie, here thinking she knows exactly what he's saying. And when he says that line, it wasn't time that did it, it kind of blows her mind. She didn't realize, I think, how much she meant to Joel over the course of this journey they've been on. And here he's saying it without saying it exactly. This
is them saying, I love you to each other. Like, it wasn't time that did it, and then I'm glad that didn't work out. That is them saying, I love you for the first time to each other.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's literally, why it was such a big moment for me.
And their relationship is literally about to come to an end.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. It's so good. It's the perfect time for them to be telling each other how much they mean to each other, because then they both have hard things to do coming up.
Yeah. And it's like, yeah, when you, you know, like the... I'm certain no one saw this coming. Like, right as Ellie is bringing out the joke book and they're busting chops, boom, flashbang. And then suddenly Ellie's being drugged, screaming from Joel. Joel can't do shit about it. And as his senses are collecting, he gets butt in the head with a rifle. And then when he wakes up, he's going to be in hell.
It's another one of those failure moments for him. You know,
yeah.
As he's laying there writhing around, hearing Ellie shout his name,
it's
he's
happening probably thinking, again. Oh my god! Oh my god! Yeah. And I can do nothing. I can do nothing. I'm helpless.
Mm-hmm. All right. Joel wakes up in the hospital to find Marlene there, and Ellie's being prepped for surgery, which Marlene explains is a procedure to cut out her brain and replicate the thing inside it that makes Cordyceps think that she's one of them. Joel is obviously not cool with that. So Marlene orders a couple of her armed guards to walk him out. We'll kind of stay there for a second. It makes Cordyceps think that she's Cordyceps too.
I never talked this over with a scientist or a mycologist or a surgeon, and I already noticed that we've got in feedback several people claiming to be those things. I saw many people talking about this on like TikTok and Twitter. It seems like the scientific community is very skeptical about this theory and about how you would go, like, you know, and I guess in the game they have like journals and things implying that they have studied some of this, and maybe they were just looking for the first person that would have it, and they were, you know, that was the final piece and they're ready to go. But sure. Still, like, it flies in the face of all good science to immediately, again, within hours of getting this girl, to be like, yep, scrub her up, rip off the top of her head, let's get this brain out. Mm-hmm. It's just so fucking insane. And then when you go with like, oh, well, it's hijacking the signaling system and make them think they're cordyceps. What's the evidence of that? Because I've been with this girl throughout the whole fucking country, literally. And every time there's been a mushroom, she's been attacked without exception. She scans as if she's infected. The one piece of evidence you can say to the contrary is that fucking dog in Jackson. And who the hell knows? I just, like, I feel like the story they're telling me is that this Firefly guy is like a Joseph Mengele type. That he's a doctor, sure, but a little bit of a mad doctor that's gone drunk with power and no one telling him no because of their unique position. I that's what I'm getting from this guy.
Yeah, I can see that. It definitely strikes me as a little bit reckless, let's say, with your only specimen here to just kill it and see what you can learn after the fact.
And if you're going to do that, I don't understand why. Well, I think I answered my own question. Marlene had no idea she'd be dealing with this out of Joel.
Oh, yeah, definitely not.
But, like, that's so foolish to think that, well, I haven't seen Joel in, like, 4, 5, 6 months. I'm sure this Ellie girl's been a pain in his ass this whole time, and he's ready to get rid of her. And, like, boy, she really misunderstood Joel. I'm trying to think back, like, if Boston Joel would be fine with just handing over a girl to the Fireflies to be butchered.
I think so. I mean, I look at the
he's pretty immoral.
The way he handles child corpses without any emotion whatsoever.
Yeah,
he's not affected in the same way as the Tess was by that stuff. So, yeah, I think he would have, but he's changed. That's the thing. Marlene did not think he would change over the course of this journey. Maybe thought it would take less time too for him to get there. If they can find a truck, right? Because she thought, oh, they'll have our truck and they'll drive here and it'll be a few, like maybe 2 weeks, and then that'll be that. He won't have time to bond with this girl. But boy, over the 4 or 5 months it's been, it's different.
But they're like, I think that she made two mistakes. Number one, this whole like, hey, we didn't even tell her there wasn't any fear. She isn't in any pain. Like, that is such a, I don't know why she thought that was a comfort, because that just sounds horrifying to me. That makes it even worse. Like, that you just put her to sleep and her, she's just never going to wake up and she has no idea. She has that, to me, that's like, that adds a, like, a patheticness to the horror to it as well. You know?
Yeah, but no fear on Ellie's part. No stress, no worry.
To me, that seems for the Fireflies. They don't want that on their conscience. They want to tell themselves that this girl is a hero. And she would obviously want this because that's what we want her to want, and that's what we need her to want, so that we feel like, if the game had spent several weeks at this facility where Ellie's suddenly going through testing, and like the doctors are very friendly and supportive and talking about, like, you know, how brave they are for doing this, and they're doing tests, and, you know, Ellie's thinking like, oh, we're going to, you know, another, who knows, Joel, another day or two or a week, we're going to get out of here. And then they sit Joel and her down and say like, hey, here's the thing, like, we've been looking at all the other alternatives, but like, this is literally the only way to go forward with the therapy, and here's all the research and slides. And if Joel goes on a rampage after Ellie says, yes, I want to do this, it's a completely different situation. And I'm struggling to think of like, why didn't it go down that way? And the only two answers are either, well, the game would make sense, or the Fireflies are crazy. And I refuse to think that, like, well, the game's just bullshit. It's just a bogus. So I take it that the Fireflies are crazy. And
Fireflies are focused on their goal at whatever cost. And Marlene, so I like adding the stuff with Anna at the beginning, because it makes this choice feel more impactful for Marlene, because I didn't know who Marlene was to Ellie before this. But apparently she was her mother's best friend, known since, like, grew up together. There had to be a lot of affection there. There obviously was in those scenes. And this, it makes it harder. And so when she's like, you know, I'm the only one who understands, A, I don't think that's necessarily true. But that's, B, I think she believes that she has ownership over this parental relationship.
As much as Joel does.
More than Joel does, I think. More. Because
I was the first,
I was the first. I've been with her for 14 years. I've been watching over her. You've been with her for 5 months. Don't tell me about, like, the sacrifice that I'm making here as a parent.
But she's been distant, right? Like, to me, this was the second crucial flaw. To try to make an equivalence between her experience with Ellie and Joel's experience, and almost like, not only that, I'm even more so, that was the stupidest thing in the world.
But she doesn't know what they've been through. I mean, it's a partially coming from ignorance about the journey that they've been on, but it's also, it's very misplaced. Yeah, I think, like, the idea that she can be this girl's only parent, and the fact that she gave her to Fedra, which... maybe that kept her safe, but it also kept her distant. Like you said, it kept her from having to bear the responsibility of being Ellie's actual mom.
Yeah. If she was watching, it was from an extreme distance. It felt to me like she spent the bare minimum time to get Ellie into this orphanage, and then she checked out. Like, she, you know, wasn't making sure she's getting birthday presents. There was, like, it was just, you know... In fact, the only reason their path crossed is because, you know, one of her fledgling soldiers fell in love with Ellie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it rings false to me. I think it's supposed to, but it's what Marlene is feeling in that moment as
that's
somebody
what I'm saying,
who
like
feels
the,
responsible for this kid.
The Fireflies didn't consider, even if I grant that the cause is righteous and this is all possible, because like I said, I think there's three parts of this litmus test. It was like, is it possible to get a cure? Is it possible for these Fireflies to get a cure? And then what if that's the possibility, then like, what is the best way to manage the human factors that you have success? Because a lot of people are like, well, they couldn't risk Ellie saying no. I'm like, what's the risk? You have a hospital filled with armed guards against one dude and a girl who are presumably at this point unarmed. So, like, now you can't with a clean conscience do what you're going to do, but, like...
You can't do that anyway.
Right. Well, you shouldn't be able to, but clearly the Fireflies are. Like, that's the thing. Like, there's something bloodless about these fucks, that they're convinced in the righteousness of their cause, they're convinced in the correctness, so much that... But they're not. That's the thing, is, like, if they were really that righteous, they would give the girl the choice, and then if she says no, be like, well, I'm sorry, honey... we're going to murder you anyway because you are your brain's too important to let you keep to yourself. And then, like I said, carry that weight that you murdered this girl and her father to potentially save humanity. And also, like, maybe that gives you pause. Maybe we do need to study a little bit more. Maybe we do need to do this. Maybe we do need to do that. Because, like, if you do this and then you fuck it up and you don't have a cure, what the hell? I
Watch out for that fungus. We'll be right back with more Savage Starlight.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts. FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations, while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We found something to fight for. This podcast. Welcome back to Savage Starlight. Yeah, I don't know. I guess I don't completely agree with the assessment of the calculation the Fireflies are doing. I think Marlene's like, why do I need to put a choice to this child? Why do I need to cause her the stress? Why do I need her to go through that when the outcome is inevitable? Whether she says yes or no, we're going to do it anyway. Why give her this false choice? What's the point? That's causing her more pain.
It's about spare. I think it's more about sparing them, because the pain to Ellie, fear Ellie's going to go through is going to be very temporary, and saving humanity is going to be forever. But like, I mean, what's the point of respecting people's bodily autonomy? I mean, again, I understand if you're not going to, in the end. It's like asking for volunteers, and then if you don't volunteer, we're going to pick three people at random, right, to go down in Chernobyl and turn off the reactor or whatever.
Well,
it's like
if there are three people standing there and you ask for volunteers, we need three volunteers, and then they all say no, and you say, well, you're going anyway.
I think
you're all going.
I think it's a more noble and authentic thing to give the person a choice, hoping that they will volunteer, because they could. And then it's like, no, then it's, there's no moral ethical problems at all. You've explained the person, you've explained to the risk, and they're saying, you know, I'm voluntarily give up my life. So many people have given it up for me to get here. Like, and I think Ellie, even if it's his stupid, crazy Nazi medical research, I still think that Ellie goes along with it, right? Because she's not smart enough to distinguish fact from fraud, right? Mm-hmm. But like, It just lets these Fireflies off the hook in a way that I don't like. You know, they're presuming, they essentially get to presume that heroic. I could see them, like, if this all works, which I don't think it will, building a statue to Ellie and all, and like, what a bunch of hypocritical shit that would be, you know?
I mean, I guess it lets them off the hook of having to
think of themselves as murderers.
I guess Marlene does say, like, to Joel later, you know what her choice would have been. So Marlene is definitely like leaning into the idea that Ellie would have certainly chosen it no matter what.
But they were certain they would have asked, right?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You're right. That is a way to lessen the blow for themselves.
Yeah,
it has nothing to do with Ellie.
But it's convenient that they can cloak it with like, oh, we're sparing Ellie this. No, you're sparing yourself. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What they really do is sparing themselves and maybe, you know, partially sparing Ellie. But that's not why they do it.
Sure.
Anyway.
But like I said, that's the two mistakes. I think they didn't even try to manage the Joel and Ellie aspect of it. And I think Marlene was just particularly ill-suited to manage the Joel aspect of it, because her trying to draw a false equivalence and then even a superiority morally over Joel, just like you can kind of see his resolve stiffen throughout everything that she's saying that's supposed to make him more at ease. And everything she's saying is kind of like prodding the bull. I don't know. The more I think about it, the more I think that 99% of the blame for what goes down in this hospital is the Fireflies organization. And they're a bunch of they're a bunch of zealots, so that makes sense.
Sure. All right, Joel's walked most of the way out of the hospital before he finds an opportunity to jump his escorts. He goes on a murder spree, killing his way to the operating room and taking a passed out Ellie from the doctors.
Yeah, it's funny because last night I was watching more of the Ken. I've been trying to get through this Ken Burns Vietnam documentary, and I was on episode 4-8 last night. So it's late in the war. Most of the soldiers kind of know that, like, this, they're not there to win it anymore. They're being actively drawn down, and yet they're still being asked to do these offensive combat patrols. And as one of these soldiers was talking about, like, you know, he'd always thought bravery was like, you know, you're being actively taken fire. Like, you're on the boats at Normandy and the ramp's about to go down. You can already hear the machine gun fire splattering the outside of the door. You know, that, like, you'd be in a foxhole and people are charging at you. You have to shoot at them. He's like, I never thought that it would be like it would take an immense amount of courage to put on your boots and walk out of a camp into a countryside. Because, like, just walking, like, every day, people would step on landmines or people would be ambushing. And it's like, you're just in this, like, but it's like just making those steps. This analogy of, like, being put under for a surgery and you're, like, one of these things that's kind of unreal. But he's describing kind of, like, this unreal dream-like reality of, like, even though I don't see any point of this, I'm still doing it because I'm supposed to. I feel like that was Joel walking down the steps of that hospital. Like, you can tell that he's like, I am being told to do this thing, and I'm supposed to do this thing, and this is probably even the noble thing, but, like, I just can't do it. And he failed that gut check and just lashed out like he does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the conflict in Joel is all over these next few scenes.
And Pedro's just like palpable. The way you can see him, like, unraveling and detaching and, like, coming to that, like, it's not just a decision, but also it's a decision to do something and when to do it. Like, where is the exact moment? You know, where do I have the maximum advantage? And yeah, going back to Fireflies, why the fuck are these Firefly guys so aggressive and assholes? You know, like, if you'd have just sent three unarmed dudes out with Joel and been like, you know, with your arms around his shoulder and be like, man, this must be really rough. I really sympathize. You want to get a drink or something? Like, but they're just like being maximum assholes. You know, they saw Marlene talk about how much they owe him and they're treating him like a common criminal. It just feels like everything they did was calculated to make Joel snap in the way he did. It just seems so stupid.
To me, it sounds like you are invested in the Fireflies being assholes at all moments. I think this is exactly how you walk
did
out
you,
somebody
did
who
you
know
listen
is
to the Instant
not
Take
going
podcast?
To be
yes, of course, yeah. yes. I'm highly invested in making me burning these people alive to death. I'm very invested in making that a correct moral decision. Yes,
that was fun.
You cracked the code.
I did,
but
enjoy
I do
that.
Think. Do you think I'm crazy here? Like,
I think you have to deal with a guy like this. They know who Joel is. They know what a guy like that had to do to survive.
You either shoot him
trip.
Or you treat him with some kind of
mistake.
Something approaching respect.
That's a mistake. Fucking shoot him. Like, if you don't. Yeah. Marlene's biggest mistake here is not shooting Joel in the head.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it comes back to bite her. You know, it's a huge mistake, obviously.
Fireflies fucked it up. I'm glad we can come.
Agreement
on this. Yeah.
And this is like, wow. This is a big moment for Joel, right? Like I said in the Instant Take, this is the moment where you see the guy that everybody's been talking about. But it's from such a twisted perspective, right? Because the guy that everybody's been talking about, that Joel is a guy who kills callously, who will do bad things to survive. And this here is not exactly that. It's him doing those things, but for a very different reason. And I love how that has been twisted up by the end of this.
Yeah, there's I think there's telling a great story here too of, like, they're doing a lot of things. Like Joel shooting that guy through the frosted glass, I thought was another nod towards the the stealth vision that you can go into, the hearing vision. And they just stole the story of Joel is just more determined and righteous. Like, these Fireflies are, like, a lot of more firing panicky, like, just holding their guns around a corner. And Joel's, like, stepping into that corridor and aiming and taking shots. And, you know, they made this, like, I saw a lot of people, like, well, the thing, like, there was people trying to surrender and Joel killed him anyway.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, and
he doesn't
and
have
I'm
time
glad.
For prisoners.
This yeah, what the fuck he's going to do to that guy that's putting an assault rifle down at his feet?
Can't like, turn your back to him.
You cannot. You cannot. You can take, well, you're going to take a prisoner? Joel's going to lead a train of six dudes? Like, it's no. Uh-huh. Like, if the decision is to save Ellie or not, and then once you make that decision, are you actually going to do it?
Yeah.
Because taking prisoners is essentially saying, I'm not actually trying to save Ellie. I'm just playing at it. And I'm and even on the official podcast is like, I thought they might try to sugar, like, but they're like, no, Joel has, there is, that's not a decision. Like, taking prisoners and tying people up, like he spared the nurses because in his eyes, those people weren't a threat at all. They weren't military people. They were scared out of their mind. They weren't armed. Even then, that was kind of a ballsy thing to turn his back on those people with as committed as they were to their vision.
Yeah, he makes them turn around so they can't see when he turns his back. But yes, that's the thing. There are so many layers to this choice and moments where Joel has to make these sort of micro choices within this larger choice that he's making. And to me, like, killing the doctor is one of those moments. And it's made in a split second, right? He does not hesitate in the slightest to kill this doctor. That should be a moment that gives you great pause.
Yeah.
If you think there is hope for a cure, because this guy, this might be the only guy who even has an idea of what's going on, and an idea of how to proceed with a cure. But like, Joel makes that choice before then. The thing that really sticks out to me is when he's in the elevator on the way down to the parking garage.
Oh, I know.
The way he looks at Ellie, and in my mind, he's like, going, okay, I've made this choice for this girl at a huge cost for humanity. I cannot let her know that I've made this choice for her. How am I going to proceed from here? How do I keep her from ever knowing that I've made this choice for her? Because she's in a fucking hospital gown. She was put under for a surgical procedure that never happened. What is she going to think when she wakes up? He's calculating all the things
you
that I have
see
to do.
All of that on his face. Like, I like, right? Like, she's this was, she's so worth it. This was so worth it.
Mm-hmm.
How am I going to convince her of this? How am I going to make her see
how do I make
that,
my
that
decision
right?
stick?
Yes.
Is the thing.
Yes. Yeah. And how can I continue to protect her?
Sure. Sure.
Because if I tell her the truth and she walks right back into the hospital, then like, what the hell have I done?
Right. Right. So,
and
it's such a good moment.
And you could turn that around as like, well, is that really Joel trying to protect Ellie? Is it Joel trying to protect himself? And you're
And what would she
right.
want is in there too, right? Like, Marlene's going to put this to him in very specific words here in a second. But like,
yes,
is this actually what she would want? Would she want me to save her in this moment? Or would she make the choice to get cut open? All that is going into this one look, and it's amazing how well the writing and the acting come together in that moment to just say everything you need to say.
I thought the way they filmed it was really great. Like this, this could be a crowning moment of awesome where it's like, you know, this is a commando, right? You've got a father who's trying to get his daughter from bad men, and he's just going to mow down wave after wave, and it's going to be badass, right? This is filmed a lot like the shower scene in The Rock, where you've got, you know, the Michael Bay's Navy SEALs getting cut down by the Man in Black's Army Ranger Corps or whatever. And it's like it's filmed in slow motion with very sad music and emphasis on people dying, screaming. And it feels sad. The music's profoundly sad, the way these people are begging for their life and, you know, they're just dying screaming at the hands of Joel's, at the tips of Joel's blades and bullets. And there's even something pathetic about the pediatric wing. that Joel's going through this like bombed out hospital with flickering lights, but there's these garish images of this cartoon elephant that's smiling with flowers, and there's baby storks, and there's all these things that are designed to comfort children, and this instrument of death is walking past them. It just, I think it just all really, really worked of selling the tragedy of it all.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, that the elevator ride just caps it all off.
Right. Let's go.
Wait, yeah. This, before we leave an Easter egg, there was a cameo. The primary nurse, the one that the cameras is looking at the most, the one that actually does the unhooking, that is the voice actor of a very prominent character in season two. I want to say they actually name him in the, it's just a person's name. It's not that big of a spoiler, but you know what? I'm going to try to keep it a little bit extra pure. The people that played The Last of Us 2 know what I'm talking about, can certainly look it up. But I thought that was, yeah. I thought that was cool. I thought that was pretty cool that, they're working overtime trying to get, these voice actors, parts, even if they could only do a little bit, maybe she'll have a bigger role next year.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, in the parking garage, Marlene finds Joel and tells him that he's making a huge mistake. She tries to talk him into helping her find a way to save the world. And then we cut to Joel driving down the highway. And we realize very quickly when we see Ellie that he chose to take her away. He lies to Ellie, telling her that the Fireflies gave up the search for the cure. And we see that he also killed Marlene during the escape.
Yeah, and here's where it all goes down. The whole, it wasn't for you to decide, it wasn't for you to decide either. I think that I've been trying to find other opinions. I've not seen anything that sways me. Maybe you can at tlou@baldmove.com. That what Marlene says here, like that they engineered a situation where Joel could not give Ellie a choice.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't a situation where it's like, well, I think we should ask, I don't think we should. Well, it's like, you know, it's we're going to take Ellie's choice and you either can stop us or not. And there's also like, cause Marlene. So the situation is Joel's killed a hospital full of people, including the doctor who was, you know, when she says our doctor, she didn't say our team of doctors who have been studying this. She says our doctor's got this plan. He's murdered that person. I don't know if Marlene knows that or not. I don't think the choice, she's presenting it as like it's not, she's telling us it's not too late. Even now, you can still turn around and do the right thing. I don't believe her. I think this is Firefly fanaticism. I think it, the second
Joel
that doctor's,
her, right?
Does
I mean,
he?
Joel, he wouldn't lie to Ellie about it if he believed that it was too late for Ellie to go back on his choice.
Well,
So at least in part,
Joel might
he
believe it's too
it.
Late, but Joel might believe that Ellie would still run off that hospital on a just to see.
Yeah. And it might be, say, I mean, part of the lie that he tells her at the end is to save her from the guilt that she would have over, you know, the choice that he made, right?
Yeah. Like I said, Joel's choice is only really righteous if you believe that the Fireflies had no hope, which I think that's an easy bar.
Sure.
And also that Joel couldn't have done anything else other than let the Fireflies kill her, and that since he had to do those and there's no other way, that like Ellie would feel, yeah, like you said, guilt, responsibility for the decision that he made, and he's trying to absolve her of that.
Yeah.
And I think it's more
protect her in an emotional
so
way.
Now, just as we interrogated the Fireflies when they're like, hey, you know, she felt no pain, she's no experience, no fear. Is this actually for Ellie's protection, or is it more for Joel to continue preserving the relationship that they've had? Is he telling her to protect her? Is he telling her to protect, not telling her to protect himself? I guess is what I'm asking.
It can be both, I think. like I said, there are so many layers to this decision. When he
right,
makes
like I said,
the choice.
I don't think the Fireflies weren't lying when they're saying we're trying to spare her fear and pain. But I don't think that's not the reason that they did that. I don't think Joel's lying when he's trying to spare Ellie the pain either. So, yeah, it's probably a little bit of both. But which do you think it's more?
I don't know. I don't have a good, I'm not going to be able to give you a percentage on each of those. I will say it's a mix, and yeah, that I understand from these scenes that it is a little bit of a coward's way out to not tell Ellie what's going on.
Yeah.
But it also makes it less stressful for her.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that she's a minor child. You know, she's 14. In the real world, Joel, if he was her father or guardian, would have a lot of say in her medical care. Like, I was trying to think of, like, if my son fell in with a cult. Like, if my son decided he wanted to go off and join the Scientologist or join the Moonies or something. Like, mm-hmm. I might bodily stop him. Take him to a cult deprogramming thing or something against their will, especially if he's like 14 or 15. I don't know. Is that
it's
violating
tough because Marlene's
his, like,
her mom, right?
She's her absent mother who now wants to turn her over to Nazi medical doctors, but sure, yeah.
Sure. I agree. Not like been the most present of moms. But she, you know, has taken on a promise in the way that Joel has taken on a promise, and she's willing to break that promise. Joel is not. So I don't know. It's murky. And that's the thing I love about the end of this game and the end of the show is the decisions are all very tough ones to make. There is no clear, obvious do this and everything will be all right.
Yeah. No, I agree.
All the paths are blocked. All the paths are like you have to cut through a building and climb a tower to see the way forward, you know?
It is extremely murky. I think there's ways they could have told the story to eliminate some of the murk, but clearly they intended the murk to be there.
100%.
Here's a fourth way to look at it. Who had the most unencumbered choice that they could have made? And I think it's clear that the Fireflies are the ones that had the primary choice, and the choice they made was terrible. Like, mm-hmm. they made... With completely unforced errors, they made tons and tons of mistakes in how they handled the situation and how they, you know, approached the seriousness of the choice. So, like, Joel, you can argue that he made bad choices, but he made those bad choices standing on the shoulders of truly terrible choices that weren't encumbered by anything else. Mm-hmm. You know, other than, I guess, the fact that the world is a fungus hell. And you don't have state-of-the-art research centers and, you know, tons of doctors to go. Like, you know, but they made all those decisions. Like, Joel was knocked out. Ellie was knocked out. They could have ran that table and done whatever they wanted. But the end result is, I think, mostly their fault. And just a chain of causality of nothing else. And fuck those Fireflies.
The thing that I like about the show here is it's even better in these terms than the game is, because you don't have as much backstory in the game. You don't get the scenes with Anna at the beginning of, you know, but between Ellie killing David and Joel making this choice, you don't know anything about the mom. You don't know anything about Marlene's actual real connection to Ellie here and what it might mean to her. And so when she says something like, so because we have that context and she says something like, I'm the only one who understands, you can almost buy it. And I think that's enough for the show to do what it's trying to do here. Whereas the game, Marlene can be more detached from it and the choice can be easier for her. And I think it only adds to the decisions that everyone makes here to know how much Ellie's mom meant to her, if not Ellie herself. And how much that promise that she made would have meant to her. So good on them for every time they add something to this show, I feel like it is a success.
Yeah, I was actually worried that they were going to do something different, that, like, you know, that Neil was going to put his thumb on one side of scale or another, or maybe make me like, ah, man, I just really wish I hadn't burnt all those Fireflies to a crisp when I was playing through the hospital level. But no. Oh, I still feel morally satisfied with my decision to kill them all.
And it sounds like there wasn't... This wasn't necessarily, like, stuff they had to make up for the show. Apparently, when they were writing the first game, Neil had all this in his head as backstory, for Anna, for Ellie's mom. And they were going to make a live-action short, I think is what he wanted to do. Yeah, and they, you know, stuff falls through. And that project fell through, and so he never got to make it, but he did, if not fully write it, he at least had this headcanon established after the first game.
Yeah, I heard that on the main podcast, the official podcast. Maybe I'm way out of bounds here, but I got a little bit of George Lucas twinge when we started talking about that. The way, like, George, you know, after people started blowing smoke up his ass and talk about what a modern myth maker he was, and he'd be like, actually, I got a whole fucking notebooks full of backstory for Anakin and Obi-Wan, and if you understood my whole story, you'd find out it's all about him. And then we found out that was all a bunch of bullshit, and he didn't really have any ideas and all that kind of stuff. Like,
sure. I can see that if there wasn't an actual short in development. And I don't know. He doesn't go into detail on like the state of it and when it was cut off and details. But
yeah. Yeah.
He says no, there was a project in development. So I'm inclined to give him the benefit of the doubt there.
Sure. And if the holiday special wasn't greenlit, George could say the same thing. I had a live action sort that was going to really explore the deep roots of the religion of the. But I don't know. It's like one of those things where it's like, anytime someone starts just conveniently saying, oh, I actually had all this figured. But yeah, it did make it into the, and it did seem like he had a pretty complete story that he told another storyteller. And
it makes sense that you would do this, right? Come up with some kind of backstory, even if you're not going to include it in the game. You have to flesh out the world and the characters and.
Any kind of storytelling probably has a whole bunch of, I mean, I haven't told even that many stories, but I know that, like, you're always thinking about it, right? And you're thinking about the characters and, you know.
Yeah, totally.
Sometimes that gets written down in Notepad, sometimes it doesn't, but.
I will say, like, to go on about how well the show has done this, and I want to say the game does this too. The way that they cut to Joel just driving down the highway, they put the decision to you, right? Like, to Joel, you can still change this. You can, it's not too late to give us Ellie, to walk away, save the world. And then you just cut to Joel driving down the highway. You don't know what he's decided. And I love the way they play that moment for people who don't know, haven't played the game. That's got to be a moment of wonder, wondering whether Joel made the decision to take Ellie or made the decision to leave her behind. And then we slowly realize as we hear someone stirring in the back seat. It's just a beautiful filmmaking moment.
It is really cool. Yeah. And I love how they interspersed this final revelation with Joel killing Marlene, you know, like him telling it turns out there's dozens of you that couldn't make it work. And
how it interrupts Joel's train of thought in that moment, yeah. Right? It's not something that's like thematically supportive. It's actually happening in his head. It's replaying. There's a weight to the choice he made in that moment. I don't know if he realizes that he effectively killed Ellie's mom, but that's what he did.
Well, I also wonder if, did he go too far? Like, as you could see, he's, like, making shit up. Like, oh, yeah, it turns out there's a whole bunch more people are immune. You said dozens? Oh, and they're at the hospital. Because you don't know what they said to her before she's knocked out. Oh, couldn't make any of it work. And then he adds that, you can almost tell he thinks it's, like, he's wincing. He's like, in fact, they've stopped looking for a cure. Like,
if this was the case, why am I in a hospital gown? Why was I knocked out? Why was I put under?
Raiders attacked us. I barely got you out, you know, and that makes her think
about
Marlene.
Why did they bother to put me under and prep me for surgery if they had no hope and had stopped giving up, had given up on the idea of a cure?
They were completing one last. Yeah, it's too little and too much. And the important thing is, like, Ellie's reaction to it. Like, she turns her back on Joel. Like, she recognizes this for the bill of goods it is. And, like, she's spending, her mind is, like, processing this for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
Now, when we go to the ad, make every shot count. We'll be back with more of Savage Starlight.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't.
In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info. We're not the cure for mankind, but we have your favorite podcast. Here's more of Savage Starlight. Let's talk about the rest of the episode here. There's one more
wait,
scene.
Wait, before we do, did you think there's anything to Marlene begging for her life at the end? Was that... Because I, you know, again, fuck those fireflies. I'm always looking for ways to further catch them in their hypocrisy and justify my own terrible moral decisions that I made in violating their bodily autonomy by roasting them alive. Mm-hmm. Do you think that, like, there was something that we're supposed to draw some kind of conclusion to Marlene begging for her life, even though that's a completely illogical thing to do at this point, because of course she's going to come after Joel and Ellie.
Like, the choice has already been made. Why let her live? Like, are you relating this back to Ellie and the choice that they've taken from her?
More of like
her life.
Like, why are you begging for your life? This was a moral choice that you made to take Ellie's life, and these are the natural consequences that you're living with, and the world's already like, why the fact that she still wanted to keep living in this shithole world even though there's no hope for a cure, like, was that supposed to, like, again, you go back to, like, what is the point even of a vaccine or something that would, like, you know, is that magically going to make the world so much better that it's worth? It's like, it's not, this isn't 6 hours into the infection where you still had 8 billion people left on this planet. This is 20 years on when you have 99% of the population dead. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this all goes into, like, is this all worth it? And I think Marlene, even though she's shot in the gut, probably has not a huge prognosis, and she's going to have to live the rest of her life in this shitty, like, the fact that she still wants to live, I kind of think... proves that life was worth living without the vaccine, or, like, people are starting to figure out ways to live. I don't know.
Yeah, it reveals a mental state of that character, certainly, that they, given the, well, I don't know, the stakes are not as high in this moment, right? Her death isn't going to save humanity. So it's hard to say it's hypocritical. I don't know. Feels just like a natural reaction.
And like I said, people can accuse me of trying to salve my guilty conscience, but I gotta say, my conscience feels squeaky clean. I sleep like a baby. Yeah. Sleep like a baby with the knowledge of me killing all them fireflies.
All right, let's head back to Wyoming, because that's where Joel and Ellie are headed. The car breaks down, but they're close to Jackson, so they hike the rest of the way, with Joel going on about how Sarah and Ellie would have liked each other. Just before they arrive at Jackson, Ellie tells Joel about the first time she killed someone, and then asks him to swear that everything he said about the Fireflies giving up the search for the cure was true. He does, and after a very intense moment, Ellie says, okay. And that is where we leave season one.
What? How do you feel about Joel talking about Sarah so much? Is this Joel desperately wanting his scheme to have worked? And he's pulling out all, like, he's pulling out all the emotional sharing stops to sell it, or...
This is it. He's trying to both deflect, to take her mind off of the choice that he just made for her, and also connect them even more closely so that she...
He's selling himself.
Yeah. So that she will not question that decision. Or not even question the circumstances around that decision, because if she does, that decision is revealed for what it obviously is.
Yeah.
So this is the place where it felt desperate to me. Like, everybody's like, oh, does it feel desperate, him trying to do the Chef Boyardee boggle routine? I'm like, no, this is him trying to help a young girl who's been traumatized. This is where it feels desperate. This is for him more than for Ellie.
I think you're right, because I think the first stuff is just normal parents trying to, like, be, you know, the person who breaks their kid out of the bad mood, you know? And it's not just, like, exclusively parent-child. Like, you know, if your best friend's in a funk, you try to get him out of it. If your wife or husband or boyfriend, girlfriend in a funk, you try to, you know, right? Like, that's part of, like, you know, when they're sad, you're a clown kind of routine. But, yeah, this is more, and, like, the crucial thing is like, Joel wasn't guilty about that. Like, Joel didn't have anything to do with that shit that went on with David, and he's just genuinely concerned and trying to help her heal. Here it's different because there's a tinge of nervousness. It's like a person who has been caught in a lie and is trying to, like, if I can just, and I can tell they don't believe it, but if I can just get through this dinner, or if I can just get through the night, then they'll forget about it. And she doesn't. Is there any doubt in your mind that Ellie believes Joel, or is there any?
I don't think she does.
Yeah.
So here's the thing that they say at the end of the post episode recap thing that they do on the show. Is that Ellie is forcing herself to believe Joel, and that is absolutely what it feels like. It's none of this adds up. What you're saying doesn't make any sense to me. But how am I gonna go on if the only person that I've ever trusted now is lying to my face and violating my autonomy and everything that comes with the choice that Joel's made for her? How do I go on when that's the case? So she just forces herself to believe him.
Forces herself to believe him. Because I think that, yeah, she's way too smart. There's no, and she's got way too fine a bullshit detector to believe what Joel is saying. Yeah. And you can see, like, there's 5 seconds. You're just looking at her and, like, what's happened in her head? She's, like, swallowing hard. Her eyes are bulging out of her skull. Her eyes are swimming. They're watery. And then it just kind of clicks and she's like, okay. Deciding to believe, because I actually think it goes more than, I think Ellie knows exactly what happened.
Okay.
I think she figures out that, like, they were talking to me and then they were going to do some tests and then they knocked me out and then raiders came and Joel's covered in blood. And I think she knows exactly. I mean, she doesn't know exactly what happens, but she kind of pieces together, like, what happened. And choosing to believe him is more of, like, I don't think that literally means it's true. Like, I'm going to, it's more of, like, this is
willing
a new
yourself to be oblivious.
Joel did her violence, and it's like the first, like, you know, like we just talk about this with David, like the first time David smacks across the face a woman he's trying to cow, right? They're not like, their first reaction is probably like, oh my god, David's insane, I got to get away from him, he's crazy. It's probably people's first, should be their first reaction, but it's like, oh my god, he loves, you know, this is because, you know, you find all these, and I think that this is the first violence that Joel's really done to Ellie. And she's going to have to process it. And
this is like,
she's only 14, so she might be processing this for a long time before she gets an adult perspective on it, you know?
This feels a lot to me like, and it's a very similar betrayal. This feels to me like a spouse finding racy pictures on their spouse's phone and confronting them about it, and them saying, I don't know how those got there. I must have been hacked, right? Like,
right. And you got two kids and house.
And being, like, not able to prove it, like, and the person just willfully lying to your face, and you knowing that they're lying to your face, but the alternative is to just blow up your life. The alternative is to upset, turn the tables over on everything that you thought was real up to this point. That is not a light decision to make. And so when I say, like, she wills herself to believe this, that's what it is, right? Wills herself to be in a state of denial, to be okay with knowing that this is false. It's a dichotomy in her mind where she knows it's false, but she's going to go with it anyway.
Yeah, and it feels like, you know, the way this happened over this overlook where you see this just beautiful Jackson and, you know, this paradise, this promised land that they're about to cross into.
Oh, yeah, the future.
And she's like, from her perspective, it's got to feel like, oh, my God, I'm going to move into this entirely new thing. And I only know this one person. Like, you know, I'm just going to choose to make peace with this. I can't even how do you process this as a 14-year-old? My dad just murdered everyone in a hospital to save my life. And probably because the implication is I could have saved everyone.
And she asks about Marlene, and he does not answer, which means she's probably dead.
But it's like also like I could be dead now, but he saved me again. I saved him. Mm-hmm. Like there's just so much to process, which makes, again, you know, when you go into The Last of Us 2 and, you know, Joel and Ellie are still, you know, that's the first question is like, how has their life been? How long a time is going to elapse between, have they ever talked about this? Have they just been living the lie? Who else knows about it? All great questions that may or may not be answered next season.
And because Joel is betraying the trust of Ellie here, I think it's easy to overlook his side of the thing and concentrate mostly on what this means for Ellie. But in his mind, he cannot suffer another loss like Sarah. That would kill him. Literally, he would kill himself. So this is a bit of a selfish decision as well. It's not all just, I think this girl I love deserves to live. She deserves to, you know, he definitely doesn't think she deserves a choice. But he's taking this choice and this, I guess, responsibility away from her for selfish reasons. And that's what makes it so hard to live with at the end. It's why the end of this game is so unsettling. Because
it would have been a really
nice, right? This girl gets to live. They get to live together. It should be this happy, peaceful thing. But it's so tainted by the way he chose to go about this.
Yeah. And that's just a really unfortunate thing. Cause like, I think it's an interesting thing to think about of like, what if the Fireflies had done it right? What if they had spent time, you know, doing tests and letting Joel and Ellie, you know, live at the hospital and giving them a chance to, you know, lay it out in front of them, have an Ellie fight for the decision, let them, you know, get their affairs in order and say their last goodbyes. Like, when you say Joel couldn't have experienced this loss again, I wonder if he could have, or if he would have, if there was a way to experience this as not a loss. Like, if this does save the rest of humanity, could he find, because like, I don't know. Like, I'm like 50-50 on even if the Fireflies did everything. Cause I'll give up. If there are some Firefly defenders, number one, how dare you? Number two, I'll throw you a little bit of bone. And like, I'm not entirely convinced that if they'd done everything right, that Joel would have gone along with it. Like, he might well have, like, absolutely not. She's 14 and she can't make this decision, and I'm still going to shoot up the hospital, maybe. Mm-hmm. But, like, I don't know. I think there was a pretty good chance that Joel, if this wasn't made this, like, crazy fucking ticking time bomb situation, Joel could have done the quote-unquote right thing. But that, again, that predisposes that the Fireflies were capable of delivering, and I'm... Yeah. deeply skeptical. So
I don't know. I mean, I don't view Joel's actions here as ever a choice. That's why I say, like, he's incapable of going through this again.
You literally mean that? Like, yeah
I literally
his
mean
biological
his
biological machinery
wired
will
at this
not
point.
Allow. Yeah.
Yeah. No matter what circumstances happened around this, the reveal of what they have to do to Ellie, he could not have allowed that to happen because of what we see, you know, him say at the medical camp. Like, she's what brought him out of this 20-year funk. He's not going to be able to go through another 20-year funk having lost another daughter.
Sure. He'll be
so
that old man.
It's never been a choice for him. And so taking the choice away from her, it's so rough.
Yeah, his future is probably either eating the gun right here and right now, or being that old man with the gun in
episode
Kansas
5,
City,
yeah.
Where mm-hmm. he's just, that's his only purpose left, you know?
Yep. Totally. So I don't know, man. That's it for the season. I don't know if you have anything more to say about this episode, but I don't.
We're not done yet. We still have a feedback episode. If you'd like to make your best case for why the Fireflies are good, actually, TLOU@baldmove.com. I'd like to hear it. Then next week, after everyone's had their say and we've had a moment to think about it, we will be doing the wrap up podcast. Be watching twitter.com/baldmove. I'm going to be making my announcement of when I'm going to start doing my playthrough of The Last of Us. I'm hoping to make that decision by the feedback episode on Thursday. Also be watching the next 24 hours or so for a poll going out on twitter.com/baldmove, where I'm going to be asking people's opinion on, like, the best evening to play. Of course, all the VODs will be up there for like 60 days. So if you can't watch it live, you can still watch them if you're curious about how a 46-year-old mediocre gamer makes his way through the normal mode of The Last of Us. Feel free to join. We'll be back again with TLOU@baldmove.com for feedback Thursday. A whole season recap where we're going to talk about, what we thought about the season as a whole, how it worked. There's a couple of encouraging things they said. If you're encouraging from the perspective, if you thought there was not enough zombie action, and the official podcast, Neil and Craig both talked about, like, it was a process working out how to do the zombies, and they have ideas for season two to kind of pay off the tendril stuff. And sounds like that's the one thing maybe that was a common complaint. We can talk about that, how they can even make it better in season two. There's been a lively discussion in Super Spore lore about what a Last of Us 3 might look like. Tons of stuff to talk about in the season wrap-up podcast. But yeah, please subscribe to Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige if you want to get a wrap-up feed of all of our podcasts talking about, you know, prestige television or zombies and spaceships and ninjas and shit like that. I hope you continue your journey with us. Until the next HBO thing comes out. When is the next HBO thing coming out? Do we have to wait till House of the Dragon? Surely not.
That's the next one on my radar, but they've always got good stuff coming out.
They killed Westworld.
Got now House people are going to be shouting Succession at their phones right now. But
it's true, but Succession's done. It's done after this year.
Yeah.
Got Barry. So got Barry.
Oh, right. That's HBO.
Peacemaker.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we do a podcast on Peacemaker, but we definitely talk about it on OTC. Anyway, yeah, join us Thursday for a feedback show. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.